Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
With the pandemic still raging around the world, it's worth noting that people are still dying of other preventable diseases like HIV/AIDS, tuberculosis, and Ebola. That's especially true in underdeveloped countries, what our next guest calls the Global South. Eugene Richardson is a physician and anthropologist who's worked in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Sierra Leone, South Africa, Peru, and elsewhere. He says the global public health system is broken because it perpetuates an imbalance of power rooted in centuries of colonialism. Eugene Richardson, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And I guess the most fundamental question is, why do so many people around the globe still die of preventable diseases?
Yes, I think that is the number one question of our century. How is it that we have such technologic feats to prevent death and disease and extend people's lives so much more than in previous centuries? And we actually have the resources to extend that across the globe, but we don't actually do it. And you'll hear excuses from, well, there are backward cultures that don't accept modern innovations, or that it's a logistical problem because there's not enough road infrastructure or electricity. But I think when you look at the history, it can be boiled down to a primary logic of othering people and then extracting from those other people, whether it's in the form of slavery or colonialism or now neocolonialism, economic extraction and colonization of the mental universe of former colonies.
And can we drill down into that just a little bit more deeply by looking at your own experience? I understand you've spent a lot of time in Western Africa working on Ebola outbreaks. How did that experience shape what you're telling me?
From my very first experience on a Doctors Without Borders mission 17 years ago in the Sudan to, yes, working in the West Africa Ebola outbreak and then the one in DRC, you're witness to the suffering and much of it preventable. And then, you know, you start to see the ways in which aid and, you know, global health science, you know, academic work, you start to watch the ways these are employed. And at least for me, the realization slowly dawned that these are not methods that are ever going to solve the problem. In fact, they may be methods that perpetuate it. You could look at a report called Illicit Financial Flows, I believe, in conjunction with the Jubilee campaign. You know, in 2017, they showed that on the continent of Africa, that $160 billion went into the continent in the form of aid and loans and remittances, but $200 billion came out in illicit flows, illegal extraction, tax evasion, trade misinvoicing, resource theft. And so it really shows that extraction continues to this day under different guises.
Draw the connection for me. How does that apply to what you describe as the traveling circus of humanitarian relief and epidemic research? Are you talking about the same thing?
Yeah, I'm identifying both emergency humanitarian aid, you know, Doctors Without Borders showing up for earthquakes or for, you know, Ebola outbreaks. And they do great work. And they save a lot of lives. But to me, that can't be the solution. I sort of see, you know, the MSFs and the Partners in Health of the world as forms of transitional justice on the road to global equity, not as social justice in themselves.
You go as far as saying that public health has been purposely underfunded in some countries. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, using the example of Sierra Leone or the Democratic Republic of Congo, you know, we calculated in a paper first for Sierra Leone that where there's lots of diamonds, very rich, diamond-rich country, and most of it's been thefted out. And just the taxes alone on 90 years of diamonds would have provided enough money to build a health infrastructure that would have stopped Ebola in its tracks back in 2014. So you can really trace these histories of extraction to the modern outbreaks. So to say that people are responsible for the outbreaks because of their ignorance and calling them super spreaders, instead of calling the mining companies that steal the diamonds super spreaders, is to me just a perspective choice. And so the intervention is not MSF, it's actually reparations for these colonial legacies.
And when you say reparations, what does that look like?
It can take different forms around the world, but the idea comes from, you know, you can use Malcolm X's metaphor of when a knife is stabbed into someone's back, you pull it out just a little bit, and that might be a metaphor for the aid industry. The patient still suffers. You have to pull it all the way out and heal the wound. And so reparations can be thought of as healing the wound.
Is it money?
So in some places it is. The people working on reparations for descendants of people enslaved in the U.S. are mostly focusing on the wealth gap. But for our colleagues in South Africa, they're actually looking at more at land reform. So the returning of land that was stolen by settler colonists. So it can take a different form in different settings.
We've been talking about Ebola and the consequences of colonialism, the legacy of colonialism over the years and how that's led to deaths. What about in the context of something that the entire world is looking down right now, COVID?
Each outbreak provides a different lens on to forms of coloniality. The most striking one in the COVID pandemic is the one of vaccine apartheid.
This is the idea that rich countries are getting access to the vaccines and the poorer countries are still far behind.
Exactly. It can be looked at as tragic for a number of reasons. One, morally, it's disgusting. Two, it's, you know, economically leaving the majority world to continue to suffer from lockdowns and collapsed economies is bad for the entire globe. And then the variants that could be produced in under-vaccinated areas will come back to haunt the vaccinated areas. A vaccine equity plan could actually be a first step on the road to various global reparations programs.
So I think we're getting to the next logical question then, which is, if we start with this premise that people around the globe are still dying of preventable diseases, how do we solve that problem? How do we keep them from dying?
You know, I think we have the good examples of what I called transitional justice, the MSFs and the Partners in Health of the world, and they need to continue to do good work. But the focus has to be beyond them to achieve global health equity. There's got to be real economic change so that countries in the global south can, you know, use their riches to actually procure some of the life-saving, transforming medical findings of the past century, from vaccines to antibiotics to everything we do in the hospital. That's why I keep coming back to this notion of reparations. You know, only through repairing these legacies can there be more of an equal footing to then move forward to achieve global health equity.
Eugene Richardson, physician, anthropologist, and assistant professor of global health and medicine at Harvard Medical School, also the author of the new book, Epidemic Illusions. Dr. Richardson, thank you for your time.
Thanks so much.